In today's Shadow, Edward Snowden details his plans for asylum in the exile of a Moscow airport. George Zimmerman is acquitted of all charges in the killing of Trayvon Martin, and a farewell to Toshi Sebi. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. I'm Robert Knight in New York. National outrage and protest followed this weekend's acquittal by six women on a Florida jury of the lethally stalking vigilante George Zimmerman, a white Latino, in the gunshot killing of African-American youth Trayvon Martin. Spontaneous protests against the verdict erupted over the weekend in a dozen cities, including Sanford, New York, Los Angeles, and San Francisco, among others. Trayvon family supporters are urging the Justice Department to investigate and prosecute civil rights charges against racial profiler Zimmerman. But prospects for prosecutorial success are extremely dim. Newly released FBI records indicate the agency concluded, based on interviews with Zimmerman's friends and colleagues, that he, quote, exhibited no racial bias, quote, despite his months of 9/11 calls blaming black youths for local burglaries where the unarmed Martin had legally been visiting his father and his fiancée, who were also residents of Zimmerman's housing complex. A short time ago, Attorney General Eric Holder addressed the Zimmerman verdict at a convention of the Delta Sigma Theta sorority at Howard University. Holder spoke of emotions and dialogue, but offered no specific hope for a successful federal prosecution.
We have opened an investigation into this matter. Now, independent of the legal determination that will be made, I believe that this tragedy provides yet another opportunity for our nation to speak honestly about the complicated and emotionally charged issues that this case has raised. We must not, as we have too often in the past, let this opportunity pass. I hope that we will approach this necessarily difficult dialogue with the same dignity that those who have lost the most, Trayvon's parents, that they have demonstrated throughout the last year, and especially over the past few days. They suffered a pain that no parent should have to endure, and one that I, as a father, cannot begin to conceive. Even as we embrace their example and hold them in our prayers, we must not forgo this opportunity to better understand one another and to make better this nation that we cherish. Moreover, I want to assure you that the department will continue to act in a manner that is consistent with the facts and the law.
Meanwhile, at the White House, presidential spokesperson Jay Carney was questioned about the disproportionate deaths of black youth by gun violence.
Tomorrow, Eric Holder, Kathleen Sebelius, and Sean Donovan will be in Florida addressing the NAACP. And one of the issues is on gun violence. And according to the NAACP, black males ages 15 to 19 were 8 times as likely as white males of the same age and 2.5 times as likely as their Hispanic peers to be killed in gun-related homicides in 2009. And Kathleen Sebelius, Eric Holder, and Sean Donovan will be addressing those issues. What does the White House have to say, particularly as you can't push forward with gun legislation?
Well, the president has made clear his feelings about the failure of the Senate to act on common sense legislation that would have improved upon our background check system, legislation that has enormous support across the country in blue states and purple states and red states, and that the Senate should have approved. The fact of the matter is, and the president has spoken about this, he will continue to work with members of his administration to advance the cause of reducing gun violence using the powers that the administration has, but will also continue to try to impress upon Congress the need to have Congress act.
This is 5 o'clock Shadow. I'm Robert Knight. On the legal front, the most immediate remedy available to Trayvon Martin's family devolves to a civil suit against George Zimmerman, whose personal slush fund from online and private fundraising over the past year is estimated on the order of $1 million. However, there is a catch-22 for the Martin family. And that is the 2005 Florida law under which Zimmerman was able to sustain an unverified claim of self-defense. That law is called Stand Your Ground, and in addition to Zimmerman's exculpation, it poses yet another challenge to the Martins, to wit. Under Stand Your Ground, George Zimmerman could claim so-called immunity, and if the Martins failed to get a conviction in a civil suit, they themselves would be forced to pay the killer's legal bills and lost wages. And that is now the law of the land in 34 states where Stand Your Ground has been promulgated by a shadowy conservative interstate organization known as ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. 5 o'clock Shadow analyzed the hidden hand of ALEC in great detail with Lisa Graves, director of the Center for Media and Democracy, as the Trayvon Martin murder was first beginning to gain national attention.
ALEC, which is the acronym for the American Legislative Exchange Council, is a group that describes itself as one of the largest groups of state legislators in the country. But in reality, it is a group that is largely funded by corporations and CEO foundations. And what ALEC does is it gets your state legislator off to a resort somewhere in the country where state elected officials actually vote behind closed doors on legislation as equals with corporate lobbyists on legislation that's the template legislation to change the laws in several states. And so what's happened here is that a particular bill in Florida that was cited by many as an excuse to prevent the arrest and prosecution of George Zimmerman, who shot and killed Trayvon Martin, that law, after it was passed in Florida, was taken by the NRA's hired lobbyist, a woman named Marion Hammer, to a secret closed-door meeting in Texas of the ALEC Task Force on Criminal Justice. And at that secret meeting, where no press or public was present, the NRA urged the politicians present, along with the corporations present, to embrace that bill as a model bill nationally. That meeting was co-chaired by Walmart, which is the largest seller of long guns and ammunition in the United States. And at that meeting, the NRA's proposal was unanimously approved and well-received. And since that time in 2005, bills that resemble that Florida law, bills that echo the ALEC model, have been speeding through state houses across the country. To date, the NRA brags that over 34 states have adopted that bill in whole or in part.
My goodness, the last time I counted, I thought it was only about two dozen or so. 30?
Well, two dozen appear to be quite close on all three of the major provisions, and another 10 have adopted two of the three major provisions in that bill.
One of the things that has happened because of the public concern over the proliferation of weapons and reckless use thereof is that several sponsors have withdrawn from ALEC. We're aware so far of McDonald's, Wendy's, Kraft, Coca-Cola, PepsiCo, and Intuit, Mars, I guess that's the candy manufacturer, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Can you verify that and tell us if there are perhaps others and what this financial impact might have to do with the operation of ALEC?
Well, that's correct. Those corporations that you've listed have all indicated publicly in the last few weeks that they are no longer supporting ALEC, although some of them have given different stories for why they're suddenly out of ALEC and will no longer be funding them. In addition, in the last hour, we've learned that Blue Cross Blue Shield, which has been a previous funder of ALEC, has announced that it's no longer going to be participating in ALEC. And we've also heard from a number of other corporations, including Ticketmaster, who previously had given some donations to ALEC, that they want to make sure that people understand that they're no longer a part of ALEC. And so there's been a real exodus of corporations, of brand name corporations from ALEC, as people become more aware of ALEC's agenda. And so that's what's been happening lately, along with efforts by not just our work at ALEC Exposed to connect these dots and do this research and tell these stories, but work by groups like Color of Change and Common Cause, People for the American Way, the American Progress Groups, and others that have really gone out to their members and said, hey, did you have any idea that this company like Kraft that you may rely on actually has been providing financial support for ALEC, and here's part of ALEC's agenda. But today we've just learned that ALEC has announced that it will no longer have a Criminal Justice and Elections Task Force. This is the task force that ratified the Florida law as a model bill. It's the same task force that ratified so-called voter ID bills that have been now coursing across the country that make it more difficult for American citizens to vote, that task force has been disbanded. And yet ALEC wants credit for doing so, while they don't appear to be intending to lift a finger to reverse those bills, to reverse the damage done, and in particular on the case of these voter suppression bills that are going to make it more difficult for college students, people who don't drive and have driver's licenses but have other forms of ID to be able to vote this fall. ALEC isn't going to do a thing to reverse that voter suppression that they backed before.
Well, we appreciate the early word of the withdrawal of Blue Cross Blue Shield from the ALEC consortium. I guess it makes sense in a way because they'd have to cover fewer gunshot wounds as a result of this legislation. And can you give us some idea about what percentage of the total funding of ALEC, these handful or a dozen or approaching a dozen corporations withdrawal means, is that really where most of their money comes from? Do they have deep pockets from some parent organization? How do they stay afloat?
Well, sure, that's a great question. ALEC keeps that information very secret, but I think a conservative estimate would be that this has cost them at least $500,000 in terms of members saying that they don't want to be associated with the NRA's extreme gun agenda. It may be much more than that because we don't know the full total of corporations that have been involved in ALEC. ALEC claims that it has over 300 corporations or special interest groups that are its members, in addition to legislative members.
Don't the 990s give some indication, the tax forms that are required to have some kind of disclosure?
Well, that's a great question. What those tax forms show is that less than 2% of ALEC's total $7 million budget comes from legislative dues, the dues of legislative members. It does not disclose how the other 98% breaks down. It's largely, however, from corporations and sometimes from foundations like the Gates Foundation, which recently indicated that it will not be providing ALEC with an additional grant beyond the $300,000-plus it had given previously. And so it's not clear how much ALEC's funding has been affected by this exodus, but certainly they've been showing signs of desperation. They actually put like a 12-inch by 3-inch donate button on their homepage last week, which was kind of, I think, the biggest donate button I've ever seen in my life on a website, especially for an organization that actually isn't supported really from grassroots donations from ordinary individuals. That it's an organization that's largely supported by some of the richest corporations in the world, and it does have some deep pockets. Koch Industries is a longtime funder of ALEC. It sits on its board. It's been the chairman of ALEC's board. That's the corporation that is led by the Koch brothers, David and Charles Koch, who are the two of the richest billionaires in the world. Back in the 1990s, when ALEC was on the ropes financially, the Koch family, in essence, authorized a nearly $500,000 loan to ALEC to keep it afloat. And so it does have some big resources to go to, including the tobacco industry, which is a long-standing part of the ALEC agenda, as well as the asbestos industry, which has been working with ALEC to try to prevent American consumers who have been harmed by asbestos, who may be dying from a mesothelioma or other asbestosis or other asbestos-related injuries, from getting justice if the corporation gets sold to another corporation, so that the successor corporation gets the assets but not the liabilities. So there are some big financial interests that have been backing ALEC and benefiting from ALEC. Those guys, like the Koch brothers, don't seem to be going away.
Can ALEC perhaps wire home for additional money from the Heritage Foundation and their conservative progenitors?
Well, the Heritage Foundation is, in some ways, a sister or brother organization to ALEC. It was co-founded by the same man who co-founded ALEC. That's Paul Weyrich, who passed away a few years ago, who was a right-wing activist who responded to calls for businesses to get more involved in public policy by creating groups like ALEC and Heritage Foundation. I suspect it's more likely that the common funders of ALEC and Heritage will be sought out, and those common funders include the Koch brothers and the Koch family foundations.
Well, one of the things that has been done is the retrenchment, or at least the announcement, however useful that announcement is, about the legislative task force on criminal law being, put in the penalty box, suspended, or under reduced operation. But does that really mean that the agenda of ALEC has been brought to a stop? Maybe they're playing possum, because the gun law, the stand your ground law, is not the only area that they have been active in, and you alluded to some of those, and there seems to be a xenophobic mission about their agenda with the immigration laws, and what some would say is an anti-democratic agenda with the voter ID laws that would be selectively applied to people of a certain hue. Can you take us through each of those other initiatives, which may perhaps encroach on the very democracy that the legislative councils purport to support?
Well, those are examples of bills that were approved by the ALEC Criminal Justice and Elections Task Force, the Public Safety and Elections Task Force. The bill on the bill to say that these voter ID bills should be a national model was approved with the NRA, the National Rifle Association, as the co-chair. Similarly, the bill that was passed in Arizona, the controversial SB 1070, that has had a devastating impact on the local economy in Arizona, as well as on immigrant families in Arizona. That bill was ratified after the fact by this same task force as an ideal bill, and then subsequently was introduced in other states like Alabama. The prison privatization binge, the whole industry, the multi-billion dollar industry that has emerged to take Americans' tax dollars out of the public prisons and put them into private prisons where there's profit sharing for prison wardens. And where these prison companies seek to get a guarantee from states for a certain number of beds, in essence a vacancy rate of only 10%, that their beds will always be 90% full, or the state will pay up to that amount for prisoners. These corporations have been longtime members of ALEC. CCA, the Corrections Corporation of America, is no longer a member of ALEC, but it was for well over a decade, and its agenda was implemented in numerous states. And so there's a number of bills that were embraced by ALEC, ratified by ALEC, promoted by ALEC, that were made possible through the bankrolling of ALEC's operations by numerous Fortune 500 corporations, and those bills remain. They remain on the books. And so today's announcement by ALEC, which I think does show the strength of the grassroots movement in this country, it does show the strength of ordinary citizens raising their voices and saying that they don't want corporations playing this kind of role in policy and politics. That's a strong statement for the power of the grassroots and how they should be even more empowered. But in terms of ALEC's agenda, they have not indicated they're going to lift a finger to reverse the damage that their policies have done. And this isn't the only area. ALEC's agenda in their supposed jobs agenda is quite extreme. For example, they have a bill they're pushing that's in their so-called tort agenda, which would make it impossible for you to sue if your husband or wife is killed by a dangerous drug that was approved by the FDA. So even though we've seen day after day, in fact, month after month, of recalls of drugs in this country that were approved by the apparently inadequate process of the FDA, these drug companies want to hide behind that FDA approval and deny you any chance of getting to court to get damages for the loss of your loved one and the lost income, even if their product is recalled, unless, except for in very rare circumstances. And so this isn't about, jobs. This isn't about corporate responsibility. This is about corporate irresponsibility. It's about saying that ALEC will continue to push an agenda that advantages corporations to the detriment of ordinary people and makes it more difficult for ordinary people to get their day in court if they're injured or killed by corporations, or if they lose their job, to make it more difficult for public workers and private workers to negotiate to keep their jobs, to make it more difficult for cities to pass resolutions to protect workers and ensure that people get sick leave so they can take care of their families when they're sick, to make it more difficult to get health care reform in this country. ALEC's agenda is an extreme agenda. It's not just in the area of guns and voting.
We're speaking with Lisa Graves of ALECExposed.org, as well as PR Watch. And I commend to our listeners' attention your website, because you have the legislation that is being pushed forward by ALEC on such areas as you have mentioned in regard to tort reform and pharmaceuticals and income support and so on, as well as environmental and energy initiatives. And that website is alecexposed.org. And Lisa, has ALEC been involved in the avalanche of repressive legislation and personal tracking and loss of privacy as reflected in the Patriot Act and the National Identification Initiatives? Are they a part of that establishment of a surveillance and or police state in some of the bills they represent?
Well, that is a really insightful question. Interestingly enough, ALEC has been defended by the Cato Institute, which is right now in a struggle for control with the Koch brothers, who are longtime, the Koch family interests, which are longtime members of the Cato board. And Cato has gone forward to claim that that ALEC is no big deal and that ALEC has defended libertarian principles. But I've looked at their bills, and I'll tell you what, ALEC has a resolution unequivocally supporting the Patriot Act without change. Oh. They issued that bill in the middle of the Bush administration to back up the Bush administration. They didn't call for any increased protections for civil liberties in the Patriot Act, despite manifest documentation of abuse of the powers and misuse of the powers by the FBI and other agencies. And so they have stood behind the Patriot Act without reservation. They did one resolution opposing what's known as Real ID, which was a requirement to have state driver's license bureaus get involved in a national ID system. But meanwhile, they've pushed these bills on voter suppression, this particular bill that they call the voter ID bill, without any documented evidence of any substantial fraud in the U.S. in voting. In fact, you know, I've worked at a prosecutor's office before, and I'll tell you what, they're not soft on crime. If there was an epidemic of voter fraud in this country, they'd be prosecuting it. It's just not real. It's a hypothetical, hyped-up risk that in exchange they're pushing for changing ID rules to make it more difficult for Americans to vote. So while they claim they're libertarian, I'll tell you what, it's not really libertarianism as I've seen it. In fact, a lot of the measures they push are designed to protect industries, to protect corporations. It's sort of crony capitalism at its worst because it's intended to not hold corporations accountable, in fact, to make them not accountable. And even in their rhetoric, in opposition to the number of good government and watchdog groups that have come out to express concerns, they've claimed that the people who would dare to use consumer power to hold these corporations accountable are somehow socialist or leftist or even fascist, in the words of Bill O'Reilly, are absurd because, quite frankly, if this is supposed to be about capitalism and the free market system, then these companies ought to be sensitive to the demands of their consumers.
Lisa, I'm concerned that there is a meta problem as well, where these privileged and well-funded star chambers of legislation create an environment in which being a dissident becomes too costly for cowardly politicians. In particular, let's just take an example of the Patriot Act. I see very little difference between ALEC and President Obama, who re-signed the bill, and the Democrats and the Republicans of the United States Congress, all of whom voted for its renewal. So do you see that as being something that makes people who might otherwise do the right thing not do the right thing?
Well, I have to say, as someone who has spent a number of years trying to get the Patriot Act reformed, I'm deeply disappointed by members of both parties, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, that have not insisted on crucial changes to protect civil liberties and to protect the freedom of dissent in this country, and in fact have unfortunately allowed the Bush administration policies to be entrenched and to deepen in some ways. I personally have tremendous disappointment at that, at what's happened, and the level of control and influence of the national security infrastructure in cowing politicians. Mm. But I think that that's part of a, in some ways, it's part of a similar issue or similar problem, which is sometimes described as the capture of legislators by the bodies that they're supposed to be regulating. And so in the case of national security, you have government bodies, including Senate and House oversight committees, that are tasked with overseeing that industry, in essence, the national security industry, and yet they spend so much time in some ways with representatives of that industry that they become captured in some ways by the information provided or by the influence of that industry. And I think that's deeply troubling in a democracy because those agencies are supposed to be protecting our interests, and those politicians have much less contact in many respects with civil libertarians and from either political party or no political party who are concerned. Similarly, here you have an instance where in manifest ways what ALEC does is it provides special access, extra access to the corporations that are supposed to be regulated by these politicians. And so you have corporations that are doing business before the state, that might be regulated industries before the states, that are getting going on these special trips down to ALEC meetings at fancy resorts where they get special access to these politicians to push their agenda. And in fact, through ALEC task forces, these unelected corporate lobbyists are given an equal vote to the elected officials in so-called model legislation. I'm actually stunned that any elected official would debase himself or herself so much that they would actually allow themselves to go into a closed-door room and give an equal vote to unelected corporate lobbyists and special interest lobbyists. As someone who worked hard to try to get the Patriot Act reformed, when I was working for the ACLU and the Center for National Security Studies, there, I'll tell you what, no politician ever told me that I got an equal vote, and they shouldn't have. The best I would hope is that they would listen to me and hear my concerns, but what ALEC does is totally different than ordinary lobbying. This is where politicians and corporations actually vote as equals behind closed doors on model legislation to change your rights, and then those politicians come back to their state house and introduce those bills, cleansed of any reference to the fact that they were already pre-voted on by corporations and sometimes themselves in these backdoor ALEC meetings. We believe that this democracy, our democracy, is worth fighting for and saving and shining a light on corruption, and that's one of the reasons why we have worked so hard to make sure people have the resources available through alecexposed.org to tell these stories in their own states and show how corporations are exerting excessive influence on our policy and to reclaim our democracy.
Thomas Jefferson could not have said it better. Thank you, Lisa Graves.
Thank you so much.
Lisa is the executive director of PR Watch, but we also commend your attention to the website alecexposed.org, where you can both be enlightened and support this kind of investigative work. Thank you once again, Lisa.
Thank you so much.
This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight in New York. Up next, NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden pushes back with a statement and press conference from exile in a Moscow airport.
I will provide our intelligence and law enforcement agencies with the tools they need to track and take out the terrorists without undermining our Constitution and our freedom. That means no more illegal wiretapping of American citizens. No more national security letters to spy on citizens who are not suspected of a crime. No more tracking citizens who do nothing more than protest a misguided war. No more ignoring the law when it is inconvenient.
I can assure you that this isn't about spying on the American people. I have a high level of confidence that this is used for to protect us, and I know that it has been successful in preventing terrorism. There are certain things that that's appropriate for me to know that's not appropriate for the bad guys to know.
Okay, we want a balance between security and privacy and freedom. But maybe technology, and as far as Snowden, he did, I may be in disagreement with you, he did violate the law in terms of releasing those documents. We don't know. I understand. But he did violate the law.
We've got a whole lot of business that we do with China and Russia, and I'm not going to have one case of a suspect who we're trying to extradite suddenly being elevated to the point where I've got to start doing wheeling and dealing and trading on a whole host of other issues. Simply to get a guy extradited so that he can face the justice system here in the United States. My continued expectation is that Russia or other countries that have talked about potentially providing Mr. Snowden asylum recognize that they are part of an international community and that they should be abiding by international law. And we'll continue to press them as hard as we can to make sure that they do so. But let me, one last thing, because you asked a final question. No, I'm not going to be scrambling jets to get a 29-year-old hacker. I have two words for you. Predator drones. You will never see it coming. You think I'm joking?
Those were several heroes of the Democratic Party defending the NSA surveillance regime in America, including Senator Al Franken, party leader Nancy Pelosi, and, of course, President Barack Obama. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow. I'm Robert Knight. And over the weekend, the target of their rage, NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden, pushed back and held an international press conference in a Moscow airport to detail his search for political asylum. The event was conducted in English and Russian, but we have edited the proceedings for an English-speaking audience. Here now, Edward Snowden.
Hello, my name is Ed Snowden. A little over 1 month ago, I had a family, a home in paradise, and I lived in great comfort. I also had the capability, without any warrant of law, to search for, seize, and read your communications. Anyone's communications at any time. That is the power to change people's fates. It is also a serious violation of the law. The Fourth and Fifth Amendments to the Constitution of my country, Article 12 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and numerous statutes and treaties forbid such systems of massive, pervasive surveillance. While the U.S. Constitution marks these programs as illegal, my government argues that secret court... I've heard this many times over the last number of weeks. So, well,
well, we should ignore that because it's going to go on for quite a long time soon.
While the U.S. Constitution marks these programs as illegal, my government argues that secret court rulings, which the world is not permitted to see, somehow legitimizes an illegal affair. These rulings corrupt the most basic notion of justice, that it must be seen to be done. The immoral cannot be made moral through the use of secret law. I believe in the principle declared at Nuremberg in 1945. Individuals have international duties which transcend national obligations of obedience. Therefore, individual citizens have the duty to violate domestic laws to prevent crimes against peace and humanity from occurring. Accordingly, I did what I believed right and began a campaign to address what I witnessed. I did not seek to enrich myself. I did not seek to sell U.S. secrets. I did not partner with any foreign government to guarantee my safety. Instead, I took what I knew to the public, so that what affects all of us could be discussed by all of us in the light of day, and I asked the world for justice. That moral decision to tell the public about spying that affects all of us has been costly, but it was the right thing to do, and I have no regrets. Since that time, the government and the intelligence services of the United States of America have attempted to make an example of me, a warning to all others who might speak out as I have. I have been made stateless and hounded for my act of political expression. The United States government has placed me on no-fly lists. It demanded Hong Kong return me outside the framework of its laws in direct violation of the principle of non-refoulement, the law of nations. It is threatened with sanctions, countries who would stand up for my human rights and the UN asylum system. It has even taken the unprecedented step of ordering military allies to ground a Latin American president's plane in search for a political refugee. These dangerous escalations represent a threat not just to the dignity of Latin America, but to the basic rights shared by every person, every nation, to live free from persecution and to seek and enjoy asylum. Yet even in the face of this historically disproportionate aggression, countries around the world have offered support and asylum. These nations, including Russia, Venezuela, Bolivia, Nicaragua, Ecuador, have my gratitude and respect for being the first to stand against human rights violations carried out by the powerful rather than the powerless. By refusing to compromise their principles in the face of intimidation, By refusing to compromise their principles in the face of intimidation, they have earned the respect of the world. It is my intention to travel to each of these countries to extend my personal thanks to their people and their leaders. I announce today my formal acceptance of all offers of support or asylum I have been extended and all others that may be offered in the future. With, for example, the grant of asylum provided by Venezuela's President Maduro, my asylee status is now formal, and no state has a basis by which to limit or interfere with my right to enjoy that asylum. As we have seen, however, some governments in Western Europe and North America have demonstrated a willingness to act outside the law, and this behavior persists today. This unlawful threat makes it impossible for me to travel to Latin America and enjoy the asylum granted there in accordance with our shared rights. This willingness by powerful states to act extra legally represents a threat to all of us and must not be allowed to succeed. Accordingly, I ask for your assistance in requesting guarantees of safe passage from the relevant nations in securing my travel to Latin America, as well as requesting asylum in Russia until such time as these states accede to law and my legal travel is permitted. I will be submitting my request to Russia today and hope it will be accepted favorably. If you have any questions,
yes, please.
I will answer what I can. Thank you.
NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden speaking over the weekend in Moscow. We now hear the Q&A section of the multilingual event, once more edited for English.
I believe that the legal means to stay in Russia safely, to attempt to move to Latin America, is to request asylum in the Russian Federation.
Do you realize that if you get asylum in Russia and then you cross the border of Russia, you lose the right to stay here as an asylee?
I'm not sure I understand that legal point. I'd be happy to learn more about it. But I believe that all states have the sovereign right to grant asylum, and the grant of one state's asylum does not conflict with another state's. To clarify that point, we've seen offers of asylum from multiple countries, for example, in Latin America, in accordance with the Caracas Convention of Venezuela, already with Bolivia and Venezuela. And President Putin has previously said he would be open to a grant of asylum. So these are legal issues that I agree are important and need to be worked out. This is an expression of intent. But the key for everyone here to remember is that my ability to travel has been illegally limited. So my opportunities to seek and enjoy asylum through all legal means have been curtailed.
Do you want to ask for a political asylum here in Russia?
I do intend to ask for political asylum in Russia. To reiterate, I can only at this time formally accept, or I suppose legally accept, asylum in Russia because of the limitations on my ability to travel.
What is your political affiliation?
I'm an independent. I'm not affiliated with any U.S. political party.
Socialist, whatever.
I believe that all people share common rights. They're universal values that cross all parties. If anything, my political leanings could be described as libertarian.
Libertarian. Did you vote in the election?
I did.
For?
I can't describe that.
Is Russia your preferred destination, or you would prefer some other place to go, but you're just stuck here,
to make
and that's
preference.
Where you are?
If I could express a preference, I could consider that question, but based on the actions of the United States, I can't express any preference.
I also promised to ask a question on Channel 1, Russian television. How do you like Russia so far?
Russia is very safe.
Okay.
The problem is how you get to those countries. Because to Russia, it's quite close right now.
Yeah.
Do you know that there is a number of international organizations, passports, to move or to travel?
There are a few difficulties there. One is that I am already recognized as an asylum seeker by UNHCR. I began the process in Hong Kong. And as we saw with President Evo Morales' plane, the U.S. does not recognize the protection of UNHCR when it comes to political persecution. Additionally, the Secretary General of the United Nations, Ban Ki-moon, has made statements stating that he basically thinks what I have done is a disservice, it's misuse of what exists. Therefore, he's biasing the processes of UNHCR. Beyond this, most international humanitarian organizations require you to come to them. They don't have offices in Sheremetyevo Airport. These are the difficulties we've faced. Everything that I've learned regarding my passport and my travel status being recognized by the United States has been through the media, the same as everyone else. I have received no official information from the United States government directly regarding the actions they've taken against me.
Why do you think you are being prosecuted by the United States, in personal opinion?
It's about setting an example for those that speak out against the interests and political directives of the United States government. They want to discourage people from speaking truthfully if it is against their interests.
You are officially requesting an asylum here in Russia, right?
That is the intention.
So what would you like the persons present to do for you at this point in time? What would you like all those organizations to do? To address the Russian government on your behalf?
Yes, I think it is appropriate for everyone to act in the capacities of their organization and their interests if they believe this is right and proper, to support it in any way they can. But I want to make one clear point. You mentioned the U.S. position regarding my whistleblower status. Polling shows that 55% of Americans disagree with them. And based on that, that means foreign governments are representing American citizens better than the American government is. That's the state of American government today. One more point I want to make on that last thing as far as requesting assistance. I would also ask the organizations to petition the U.S. and European governments to ask for and demand the right to seek and enjoy asylum that the U.S. is a signatory to under the Universal Declaration on Human Rights. They need to explain why they are interfering with everyone's asylum right. My number one request would be that I have some kind of legal status to travel. And perhaps stay in Russia while this situation involving the breach of my rights is resolved. As it stands now with stay, I have no complaints. I feel safe and comfortable. The airport's fine by me. I've been in much more dangerous places.
President Putin made asylum status conditional.
Yeah. Let me go ahead and address that. That's very easy for me to agree to for two reasons. One, everything that I've done has been in the past. The journalists, I can't control them. You know, what they do is not me. I can't be held responsible for that. And additionally, no actions that I've taken, nor any actions I plan to take, are intended to hurt the U.S. I want to see the U.S. succeed. Okay, last one.
So they just want to take one picture, maybe if you consider this possibility, because they want to know that you're safe and sound.
The issue with the pictures, we can provide a picture. And obviously, we have a number of experts here who can confirm that I'm fine, I'm happy, I have no issues. The issue is the more photographed I am, understanding the level of technical capability that the U.S. services have, the more dangerous my situation becomes.
Where and how? Made this statement, because we don't have, unfortunately, because we don't have what source did you
Ban Ki-moon said this in a private meeting in Iceland. I believe he was briefing members of the Icelandic parliament.
Это была встреча исландского парламента. Во время частной беседы было сделано заявление.
You can request details from Birgitta Johnsdottir. She's an Icelandic member of parliament. I think that's it for questions. Thank you guys.
Спасибо всем за то, что пришли.
That moral decision to tell the public about spying that affects all of us has been costly, but it was the right thing to do, and I have no regrets.
And now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain. My friend, I'll say it clear, I'll state my case, of which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full, I traveled each and every highway and more, much more than this. I did it my way. Regrets I've had a few, but then again too few to mention. I did what I had to do, saw it through without exemption. I planned each charted course, each careful step along the byway, and more, much more than this, I did it my way. Yes, there were times, I'm sure you knew, when I bit off more than I could chew. But through it all, when there was doubt, I ate it up and spit it out. I faced it all and I stood tall and did it my way. I've loved, I've laughed and cried, I've had my fill, my share of losing, and now, as tears subside, I find it all so amusing to think I did all that, and may I say, not in a shy way. Oh no, oh no, not me. I did it my way. For what is a man? What has he got? If not himself, then he has not to say. it was my way.
This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight in New York. And finally, we mourn the passage and celebrate the life of Toshi Seeger, the late wife of folk legend Pete Seeger for nearly 70 years. Toshi was a creative manager, founder of the Newport Folk Festival, progenitor of the Clear Water Environmental Movement, and, as Pete Seeger shared during performance in a recent mayoral forum at New York's Cooper Union hosted by a reporter, that Toshi Seeger had written a new set of children's lyrics for his peace anthem, Turn, Turn, Turn.
Way back over 50 years ago when I put this song together, I had to rearrange the words in the Bible because it didn't all rhyme. But my wife said, we had two children then, age 6 and age 8. She says, you ought to have some verses for children. Well, I said, why don't you make them up? And just this year, I found it was fun to sing them. A time for work, a time for play, a time for night, a time for day, a time to sleep, a time to wake, a time for candles. Get a time to give, a time to remember, a time to forgive, a time to hug, a time to kiss, a time to close your eyes and wish to everything turn. Now we have some wonderful musicians up on the stage. Play a verse. A fuss, a time to leave and catch the bus, a time for quiet, a time for talk, a time to run, a time. A time to dress, a time to eat, a time to sit and rest your feet, a time to teach, a time to learn, a time for all to take their turn.
Everything turn, 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 turn.
And that concludes today's 5 o'clock shadow. The program was engineered by Michael G. Haskins, Reggie Johnson, and Sean Rhodes. We welcome your comments, questions, leaks, and suggestions with an email to theshadow@wbai.org. And for 5 o'clock shadow, I'm Robert Knight in New York.